Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So it's 3 years later, and we're still talking about the big three and the auto bailout. But in the story of the return of the auto industry in America, there's another thread, the success of Ford, which shunned the bailout and still lived to tell the tale about American manufacturing. Joining me now is Bryce Hoffman, auto reporter for the Detroit News and now author of a book, American Icon, Alan Mulally and the Fight to Save Ford Motor Company. Welcome to WNYC. Bryce Hoffman, hi.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning.
And let's turn back the clock. You write about this pivotal moment in late 2008 when Ford CEO Alan Mulally assembled his team for a meeting and he asked if they could make it without the government's help. The reasoning was that this was a moment that would really separate Ford from the other two companies and that Ford was in a better position than the other two. What was their position exactly?
Well, the biggest thing they had going for them, Brian, was that before the credit market slammed shut in early 2008, they had already taken out what Mulally likes to call the biggest home loan in history, home improvement loan in history, $23 billion financing package, one of the biggest financing deals ever. And so they had more cash than General Motors and Chrysler did. They didn't have enough necessarily to make it through without some really serious cost cutting, but they had a little bit of a cushion. And as you may recall, in November of 2008, all three CEOs had just been taken a pounding at the congressional hearings on the auto industry. And on his flight back from Washington,
they took a pounding partly because they all flew in on their private jets to say how desperate straits their companies were in, right?
Well, that's true, Brian. But, you know, no one ever asked the Wall Street bankers who had been in a couple weeks before asking for $700 billion how they got to the hearings.
Uh-huh. So go ahead. You were telling a story.
Mulally flew back on his corporate jet, which Ford promptly sold right after that. He was, you know, thinking to himself, you know, I don't want to be sucked into this with GM and Chrysler, which are in much worse shape. You know, if we can avoid this, we should. And we should fix ourselves without taking a handout from the government, without taking taxpayer money. And, you know, he convened his team, like you said, and said, is there a way we can do this? You know, obviously, you know, their sales were going down. They were slipping towards bankruptcy, too. But they decided to gamble on doing this themselves. They knew that if they didn't ask for federal aid at that point, they wouldn't get another chance. Congress had made that clear, so it was a big gamble, but they took it and they succeeded. They fixed their problems themselves, and I think the American people have given them a lot of credit as a result.
And I wonder if we can fold in some callers who are Ford owners. Do you feel differently about your car, or you as a Ford owner feel differently about yourself because you own a car from the big three automaker who did not take a government bailout? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as we talk to Bryce Hoffman, auto reporter for the Detroit News and the author now of American Icon, Alan Mulally and the Fight to Save Ford Motor Company. And here's an interesting question from our website that somebody just posted, Bryce.
Sure.
Graham in the Bronx says, Ford avoided a bailout because the CEO, Mulally, is an engineer instead of a business major. Engineers are conservative and avoid risk, while business majors are risk takers. So when Mulally moved to Ford, he found that they were underfinanced and needed a cushion for a recession or other unexpected event, an action that was poo-pooed by MBA business school types at the time. Now, I'm not sure I quite get it because you just described not taking the government bailout as risky, but do you think he's onto something about Mulally as an engineer becoming CEO of Ford rather than an MBA type?
I think your listener is absolutely correct, Brian. You know, Mulally is an engineer by training, and he approached this as an engineering exercise. To him, you know, part of the reason he never kind of let his hair catch on fire about Ford's problems was to him it was just an engineering problem that he needed to find the right algorithm to fix. But, you know, to the point about the financing, you know, when Ford took out this loan, your listener is absolutely correct. General Motors, for instance, I talk about this in the book, at a cocktail party shortly after that, Bill Ford was approached by Rick Wagner, the CEO of General Motors, and he basically told Ford, you know, hey, you know, why'd you guys just mortgage your company like this? You know, that's kind of like a ghetto move. You know, it makes you look cheap, you know. And Bill Ford said, well, we'll wait and see. And, you know, a few years later, General Motors went bankrupt and had to be saved by the American taxpayers, and Ford became the most profitable automaker in the world.
Peter in Syosset, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. The question I had was one of the reasons that Ford was able to survive on its own because the other companies, in taking the bailout, helped the infrastructure, the peripheral industries, the parts suppliers to survive, and that allowed Ford to survive as well?
That's absolutely the case, Peter. And you know, Ford, as you probably know, continued to push for the bailout of GM and Chrysler even after it decided not to take a bailout for that very reason. One of the things I talk about in my book, too, is that not only did they want GM and Chrysler to get a bailout to keep the suppliers propped up, but they actually secretly worked with Toyota and Honda through a kind of secret program called Project Quark, to kind of coordinate with the Japanese automakers to make sure that the suppliers that were critical to all of these companies stayed in business.
So this is one of the scoops in your book. It's the partnership that would have been nearly unthinkable in the past. Ford, Toyota, and Honda all making a deal together to protect their suppliers, what was called Project Quark, right?
Yeah, it really was an amazing thing. I mean, I certainly had no idea about it. No one, even executives at other auto industry companies were surprised to learn about it, too. Because these companies had, I mean, Ford and Toyota in particular had basically been, you know, fighting a death match for decades. And the idea that they were able to kind of put that aside and come together and work together at this critical moment for the entire industry to keep things going and to prevent a wholesale collapse of the supply base is just kind of amazing. But it really speaks to Mullally's approach to leadership. You know, he's all about finding ways, you know, to bring everybody in, to work together, to find common solutions to problems. And I think that was a really different approach than CEOs in Detroit have had historically.
Jessica in Nutley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that listening to this conversation, I'm actually in the process of shopping for a new car, and I will now consider Ford, whereas before I wouldn't have, and just for my own personal reasons. But I don't like this whole corporate welfare state we're in, and I think what Ford did is really what the American dream stands behind. I mean, you take risks, and if they work out, that's awesome. You get to continue, and if they don't, sorry. I mean, if somebody private wants to bail you out, by all means, but I don't understand why my tax dollars are going to, you know, this guy's mansion or this guy's penthouse in the city for these CEOs of these companies that are bailed out. It's just, to me,
How about as the president would argue, for the hundreds of thousands of workers in one of the largest industries in America who would have lost their jobs, who are hardly CEOs with mansions?
I mean, okay, but the president likes to argue about lost jobs. Meanwhile, we have a net loss of 2.4 million jobs while he's in office, so I don't really take much of what he has to say at face value.
Jessica, thank you for your call. Call us again. But did Ford benefit, Bryce Hoffman, from the bailout of its competitors? If the bailout had not taken place, even though Ford wasn't vying for it, would Ford have been more likely to go down too?
I think the entire auto industry definitely benefited from it. I mean, I was in Japan in the spring of 2009 when this bailout was being discussed, and I can tell you that the senior executives I met with at Toyota and Honda were just as eager to see a bailout of GM and Chrysler as Ford was. I mean, I even met with Japanese government officials who flat out told me, we think what your government is about to do constitutes a major violation of the WTO, and we firmly support it.
Why would they firmly support it?
Because the alternative was an uncontrolled collapse of General Motors and Chrysler that would have pulled down the supply base that all of these companies depend on.
And President Obama, politically, without quite saying so in this clip that we're going to play now, takes credit for the survival of Ford, not just of the two companies that took the bailout. Here he is a few weeks ago speaking at the United Auto Workers Annual Conference. Listen.
3 years later, the American auto industry is back. GM is back on top as the number one automaker in the world. Highest profits in its 100-year history. Chrysler is growing faster in America than any other car company. Ford is investing billions in American plants, American factories, plans to bring thousands of jobs back to America.
And for full disclosure, we shortened the applause in the various points of that clip for time's sake. But Bryce Hoffman, would it be a good strategy for Republicans to make a distinction between Ford and the other two? Clearly, the president was trying to blur the distinction.
You know, I think that the this whole thing has become very politicized, obviously, and you know, I think that the president definitely deserves credit for having the foresight to see the consequences of an uncontrolled collapse of the auto industry. I think President Bush also, though, at the same time, you know, he put the funding in that kind of got GM and Chrysler through until Obama took over. So it was really, honestly, a kind of a bipartisan effort, which I think people have lost sight of, which is, you know, as it's become more politicized. But I think that, you know, I think Jessica makes a good point, though, too, which is that, you know, while we can't forget that the alternative to a bailout would have been catastrophic, it, you know, the president's bailout is not the only thing that saved Ford either. I mean, Ford made a lot of painful decisions that allowed it to save itself and not take the taxpayer money. Certainly, if GM and Chrysler had gone down, that would have pulled it down too. But I don't want to diminish what Ford also did on its own, because it was very painful. I mean, they got to the point where they literally stopped watering the plants in Ford's office buildings in order to keep the lights on. They stopped washing the windows, things like that. That's how close to the bone they got.
And
it really is an amazing feat that they pulled off.
O'Neill in the Bronx wants to add something else, and he's a Ford owner that he thinks that Ford did right. Right, O'Neill?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to mix it up a little bit about, I don't really know about the economics of it and all the backdoor dealings, but I just think when people buy a car, they're usually going to buy it for looks first, even more than reliability. And I think that Ford, they came out with a lot of new cars and they came out with a lot of new design around that same time, because I always drove a Honda. And I was looking for a Honda, and I was looking, and then, you know, I finally came down and made my decision on Ford because the way the design looked.
And that's really interesting. And forgive me, O'Neill, I'm going to cut you off for time, and we just have 20 seconds left in the segment, Bryce Hoffman. But other people are calling to say, yeah, Ford also survived because they moved a lot of assembly to Mexico. Somebody else says, well, they got a bailout from the Bush administration in the past. So literally in 15 seconds, there were a lot of factors, right?
There were, but they didn't get a bailout from the Bush administration. And the jobs they moved to Mexico, many of those are being moved back to Michigan as we speak because of this new turnaround strategy.
Bryce Hoffman's book is called American Icon, Alan Mulally and the Fight to Save the Ford Motor Company. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.